So first things first, I wanted to mention that, well, first of all, today's show is episode 50, so yay, cue clapping background sitcom noises, I guess. I don't know, maybe I'll add that in post. But yeah, 50 episodes, halfway to 100, it's a pretty big deal for us. We've been doing this a long time now. And yeah, obviously at this point, we've stopped announcing the episode number at the beginning of the show because I think it just gets a little bit tiring. So welcome to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 37. You know, it's like hearing the same thing every week. So slowly but surely, we're making those little tweaks here and there to try and make this a podcast that not only you guys would want to listen to, but something we would want to listen to. So be sure, obviously, this is episode 50, so be sure to leave us like feedback. If there's anything you think we should be doing better, changing for the show, just let us know. You can send emails to gtips@9to5g.com. That's the dumb handle or email we have to use because Google won't let us have 9to5google.com on G Suite. yeah, send us some feedback. We'd love to hear it. Second of all, we also have a new Twitter handle, which is twitter.com/ABC Scoop. Alphabet Scoop is taken by some other podcast that was called Alphabet Scoop that is now abandoned. So, you know, having to go with the second best option there. But yeah, @ABC Scoop on Twitter. Go follow us there. We're trying to build a little bit of a following of people that we know are listening to the show every week, who are engaging with us and giving us feedback and just dropping comments in the YouTube live stream and, you know, just listening every week. We want to know who you are. I want to engage with you and bring you into the show as much as we can. But yeah, let's get the show started this week. I guess the first thing is that Google now has what seems to be an official date for the Pixel 3a and Pixel 3a XL, according to a page on the Google Store that was added, was it Monday morning?
Monday morning. So this was an interesting progress of events. So it started out at like 9 a.m. in the morning with Google teasing that they are releasing new Playground, Playmoji AR stickers for the Pixel camera. The new Avengers movie, new characters, all that.
Which is not surprising at all.
Absolutely not. Biggest movie event of the year, probably. Until Star Trek. Star Wars, my bad.
Get it right, man.
Star Trek Discovery just had its season finale last night, so that's on my brain. But anyways, so their YouTube, they tweeted the YouTube video of the Pixel 3 in the Marvel Universe, which was quite cute. It integrated with the trailer, the theme of Avengers Endgame. But in the comment section, they had a link to g.co Avengers or something like that. And it took us to this Google Store page that said that something was coming on May 7th. And it really hyped up this like superhero theme, this color theme of purple, which is Thanos in an Endgame. So it's very themed about superheroes and this movie and this new phone, which we all assume is the Pixel 3a.
Yeah, and I think at this point we actually have a little bit more than just an assumption because our Kyle did some digging into the source code for these sites and actually found some evidence. Apparently one of the URLs for one of the video assets on the website uses the BS kind of abbreviation in the link, whereas last year for the fall, Google also had some video assets on a similar page, magazine, I guess that's what they're called on the Google Store, a magazine page, which used BC abbreviations. And it may be a stretch, we don't know, but it seems pretty likely to me that it's not a stretch, given that we have evidence actually to suggest that it's not a stretch. But BC seems to stand for Blue Line and Crosshatch, which, as you may know, were the code names for the Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL. And as we know already, for sure, like we know 100% that the Pixel 3a and 3a XL are codenamed Bonito and Sargo, all fish names, of course, as they have been for many years now. There is BS in these links. And we actually did see, so one of the things that we know is, I think Kyle also found an asset elsewhere on the Google Store from, I think, last week or a week or two ago when Google accidentally launched that new navigation page. He actually found that that Google had replaced something, I think, that said Bonito with BS. So we have evidence to show that this BS actually stands for Bonito and Sargo. he found some asset that reflects that. So we were pretty confident. Again, this was all found on the Pixel 3a / 3a XL, I guess, Avengers magazine page on the Google store. So yeah, and the date is May 7th. And if you've been watching the podcast, you know, you already knew the date. It was May 7th. We talked about it last Friday. So not to brag, but if you were listening to the podcast, you already knew that date.
May 7th, the first day of Google I/O 2019.
Indeed. It's weird.
How do you think this is going to play out? Will Google hardware get its long return to the stage? Or is this just coincidental and that they'll be on the Google store on the same day?
My guess as of right now is that they're going to hit the Google store on that morning. We may see. So I think if we do see it mentioned on stage, that the extent of it will be a brief mention, you know, thrown in somewhere. I don't know how they would work that into the flow of the presentation, but I highly doubt, in my opinion, that we're going to see a dedicated 20-minute block, dedicated or 30-minute block, because, you know, the keynote's only, what, an hour and a half, or is 2 hours?
Hour and a half usually, but they end up going to 2 hours.
Yeah, they pad it out so that they can, you know, have room. I think we may see them mentioned, maybe, but I don't think that it's going to be a centerpiece of the presentation. I think as with years past, last three or four years, Google has focused primarily on the assistant and software and stuff like that, AI developments, and obviously Android. So I think those are gonna be the focuses, but I don't know. We'll see. It's hard to tell, but I think what's going to happen is I think that they're going to give some kind of pre-briefs to press, you know, in the week leading up to the event. And we'll see an announcement that just drops at the same time, an embargoed announcement, probably that morning. I don't know. We'll see. I have a hard time envisioning the grand return of Google hardware to Google I/O. That just doesn't seem likely to me. I also doubt that. I mean, the press is already going to be just hammered covering stuff. At least we will be, because, you know, we're going to be, you know, digging deep into beta 3 that morning. You know, that's always our, you know, Google I/O keynote morning kind of just craziness, whereas other publications may not be, you know, covering that as in depth as we do. So maybe covering two hardware products for them would be feasible. I don't think for us. If there's like a hands-on area with the Pixel 3a and Pixel 3a XL and Nest Hub Max, honestly, we're probably just going to have to skip it because we're just going to be so busy covering the software stuff.
Okay, that's the thing. Yes, if they announce it on stage, it's going to be a very busy keynote for us. But at the same time, from the beginning, Google would be shooting themselves in the foot in regards to their brand new phones. Their software side is going to bury these phones in news if they don't give it a sizable presence. If it's just the keynote starts at 10, maybe they drop embargo at 9 and all these publications can start reviewing. It's going to be by 2 hours later, nobody is going to remember that Google just announced two brand new phones, two significant expansions into the mid-range for the Google lineup. So that,
yeah.
So the balancing of this is very tricky in terms of who is this audience for. I think there is an argument for an on-stage reveal in that this is a cheaper phone. They'll play better to other markets besides the US and the West markets. So I don't know, a cheaper device, something for developers to get their hands on. I don't know. That could be a possible play for them.
Yeah, and I guess we do have a little bit. Well, I don't know. It's like one of the things that I'm thinking about now is that clearly there's going to be a heavy co-branding here between the Marvel stuff and, you know, the Pixel 3a.
A week late.
And yeah, well, first of all, yeah, a week after the movie. But second of all, I just don't. Is there a large history of Google kind of putting those kind of co-branded things on the forefront, on the stage at Google I/O? I mean, last year there was
John Legend.
Yeah, the John Legend voice. So it's like that was kind of a collaboration. But I mean, I think we've usually seen these kind of co-branding, like, like deals and kind of, I don't know, whatever. Like they've primarily been at the Made by Google events. I'm thinking about Made by Google 2017 with the Stranger Things stuff on AR stickers or Playground or whatever it was called. So I don't know. It just seems odd to me that Google would put Marvel all over Google I.O. And it seems like,
yeah, I don't.
At the same time, Marvel is heavily intertwined with this Pixel 3a thing, which that
we
is
should
on.
Talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Apparently, Marvel is like heavily somehow related to the Pixel 3a launch. First of all, we reported, and I forgot who else it was that reported. Two places have reported that there is a purple Pixel 3a, or there's some kind of purplish lilac Pixel 3a that exists. Who was the other place?
WinInfo.
Okay, yeah, that's right. WinInfo had that. So we actually had it before WinInfo's report, but we didn't share it because, one, we weren't so confident in it. Second of all, we didn't want to potentially compromise a source because a third color is a very specific detail that I feel like, you know, you can't catch a source by feeding them information on screen sizes, especially when those screen sizes have already leaked. So we not only had that there was a purple Pixel 3a, but we also had that there, we have the name of it. So you know how Google does these kind of whatever, like kind of, I guess, funny names, the really blue or the like not blue or whatever, or not pink.
Yeah. Not pink.
Yes. So anyways, we have the name. We actually know what the purple one is called. WinFuture has not published that. We have not published that. And I'm just going to keep that because, I don't know. I'm, it's one of those things, kind of like I mentioned, it's like, I don't know. I don't want our source to be caught because that's a very specific detail. And so far, I don't think anyone knows it, but, purple thing is happening. Going back to what I was saying is that apparently purple thing's happening, and it is seems to be highly related to this Avengers thing, because as you mentioned, there's the whole everything about Endgame is branded purple. The poster, if you look up the movie poster or whatever for Endgame, it's purple. There's just lots of things that are purple in that brand. And if you go to the Google Store magazine for this landing page right now, the Avengers logo is purple. So I think this sort of purple third device is happening. So in that sense, it's very heavily tied to Avengers. The other thing is, what does the 3A, what does the A stand for? I don't know.
It'd be cute if it's Avengers, but there's no way in heck that they got a cross promotion with Disney on the Avengers branding.
No.
Especially on a mid-range phone. If this were a flagship, different ballpark. But not this phone.
This is my theory on it. And I mean, just think about going back to, like, for instance, the iPhone XR. Apple did not have to give any explanation for the R. They still have not. There is no on the record explanation for what the R means. Is there any on the record explanation for what the T and OnePlus 6T or 5T means? There's no on the record explanation for these letters. These letters are arbitrary and practically meaningless. There's no explanation on the record for what Galaxy S10e stands for. There's no E. Samsung has not said the E stands for extra cheap or whatever. Essentials. Have they said anything on the record about it? I don't think so.
I don't think Samsung did.
As far as I know, most, if not all, of these lettered names that have become the trend the last few years have any on-the-record explanation. So, I think the same will be true with Google. I don't think Google's going to say, yes, the A stands for Avengers. You know, there's no way that that's going to happen. However, all of these letters do have some kind of, I guess, extrapolated reasoning or meaning that people have derived from them. So people have taken the E in Galaxy S10e to mean essential or whatever. So, you know, people take meaning from them, even though the meaning is never shared explicitly. The only meaning that's actually shared explicitly is, this is not the main one. That's really what it means. This is not the main one. I guess not in the case of OnePlus, but in the case of the iPhone XR, the explanation of the R was, I guess one primary extrapolation was, it's the letter right before S, So it's the one right before iPhone XS. That was one person's theory. I think that probably, if I were to guess, that's probably how I would guess that Apple landed on that. They just wrote iPhone XS on a whiteboard somewhere, and they're like, let's come up with something that's not as good as iPhone XS. And someone was like, I know, iPhone XR. And they're like, yes, that's it. Anyways, so yes, the on-the-record explanation is that it's just not the main flagship. And I think that's how Google's going to treat it too. And I think that a lot of people, if this Avengers thing plays out, and if it's heavily Avengers branded and there's, you know, I don't know, whatever. I think that people will assume the A stands for Avengers. That's my guess.
It's a powerful move for Google. I'll give them that. But I don't think it really makes sense.
I don't know. It's weird.
And it's lowercase.
It seems a little bit desperate, honestly.
Desperate.
For me, slapping pop culture branding all over your product feels a little bit, I don't know, it just feels a little bit desperate. Like they're vying for attention, which they are. Like they need the attention. You know, like with the Childish Gambino collaboration and all this other stuff. This is the sticker packs and everything. It's just like Google's trying to capture the mind share of people who are fans of these different pop culture icons and movies and shows and stuff.
So,
it seems a little bit desperate. We don't see Apple we have seen Samsung do this with, you know. Apple, there's probably no exception to this, because even Apple, they do the Disney stuff on their Apple Watch. You know, Samsung has done the Disney stuff with their AR emoji or whatever, I think. But yeah, so it's not unheard of at all, but it seems like Google's really, like, if they're going to brand, if this A... Even if they don't say it, if this A came from Avengers and that was how they... It just seems kind of like, I don't know. To me, it just seems desperate. What do you think?
If they have this, I think they should just show it on stage, because they're only going to have this once, presumably. This perfect timing. This is when the movie is coming out. It's 3A. It's cute. Whatever. If they are going to lean into that Avengers Endgame branding, I think they should just do it on stage, just give it a whirl, and, I don't know, make a funny opening for IO. Otherwise, it just seems... if they want to maximize the potential with this co-branding opportunity, they should just run it.
Another interesting thing to note about this. So, I think there's a bigger picture thing to note that I think is like, I mean, a lot of people aren't really thinking about that, probably doesn't have a direct cause and effect relationship, but it's interesting regardless. Apple's relationship with Disney has kind of fallen apart in some ways, it seems. It seems like, you know, Apple has always had close relationships, obviously, with Jobs and Pixar and stuff with Disney. Yeah. And so they've found themselves in kind of an awkward position where now Apple TV Plus is going directly up against Disney Plus. I saw one headline. I think it was Mike Murphy at Quartz. Might be wrong on this, but he wrote, or someone wrote, Disney Plus is the streaming service that Apple TV or Apple wanted to, or Apple wanted or whatever. So it seems like there's been a little bit of a deterioration on that side with Apple and Disney. On another side, this is interesting to see that Marvel is so closely working with Marvel, which is, as you probably know, now Disney, working so closely with Google. This is a big deal. This is a flagship, maybe not flagship, but, you know, this is a significant product launch in the United States. It's going to hit all the major carriers, and apparently it's going to be heavily, heavily Avengers branded in some way. So... interesting to see Google kind of pick up the Disney partnerships.
Yeah. So it's good for them, I guess. It's the naming. The features are fun. I think at the end of the day, people find some whimsy out of it, and this is why Google keeps doing it year after year. So good for them. Sure. So that's the Pixel, May 7th, where... some at some time on May 7th, we're going to hear about new devices. So,
yeah, I would guess. Ah, man, it's so hard. I can't really come up with any good theories because all of them seem flawed. I really just, part of it might just be my own bias. Like, I really, really don't want to have to think about the Pixel 3a and Nest Hub Max on the day of I/O.
Okay,
the Nest personally,
Hub Max is a totally other conversation.
That's, both of them, that, I don't want to have to think about them on the day of I/O. I really don't. That's just me.
Yeah.
And that's just because I know how crazy it's going to be for us, you know, because we're in a unique position of where we're covering every tiny little minutia of announcement on Google I/O day, whereas, you know, a lot of publications don't have to do that. And so, I don't know. I don't want to have to think about Pixel 3a, especially because I find Pixel 3a boring. The Nest Hub Max, I mean, boring it's just in the sense that it's that, you know, it's just a variant of an existing product. There's nothing.
It's not the Pixel 4.
Yeah, exactly. And the Nest Hub Max is far more interesting because it's going to actually have some more significant differences versus the Google Home Hub, which I guess we can get into that now. Which, so we reported this week, and we talked about this on the show last week too. So again, if you don't listen to Alphabet Scoop, maybe you should start because we talked about this last Friday. I reported on Monday morning that Google is indeed rebranding the Google Home Hub to Nest Hub, Google Nest Hub. And we kind of had a little bit of a talk last week about theories of what's going on with the Nest branding and stuff like that. But yeah, basically my source said, yeah, regarding that whole Nest Hub, Google Home Hub, you know, thing that Google leaked, it's a well-known thing for those on the inside, so to speak. It's a well-known thing that the Google Home Hub is being rebranded as Google Nest Hub. So I took that as, okay, it's not only just my source that knows it. Apparently, it's just it's common knowledge, not to mention that Google kind of themselves accidentally leaked it by leaking the navigation for the Google Store, which literally said Google Home Hub / Google Nest Hub.
So weird.
Yeah. It's so weird.
Yeah. Okay, so for my first question, are they going to still sell? Is there a reason we're seeing so many good deals on the Google Home Hub right now? It's because after I/O, Google will be updating all the packaging, all the imagery to just Google Nest Hub, and that's why it basically doing fire sales on these devices.
Well, to be clear, Google itself is not doing fire sales, right?
Yeah.
So
$99, but that's not significant.
If I were seeing Google fire sale these themselves, then obviously I think that would be more indicative. But also, Google can't fire sell them to the degree that some of these third party retailers are. So Google may be fire selling them by proxy, you know.
Yeah, by proxy.
So
again,
yeah, I mean,
most
possible.
Of these are being sold in retailers. So like,
sure,
that's.
Yeah, I mean, these retailers may very well know that they need to push the rest of their stock because Google is about to make a big change. I don't see that as implausible. But man, it's just so confusing. We've been talking about Google Home Hub for, you know, 6 months now, and it's an established brand, and I mean, maybe not established. Maybe they're making this change now because they want to make it before.
While it's still early, yeah. And look at the Google Store navigation. It's a slash.
That's weird.
It's so non-committal in like a typical Google fashion. It's
what if there's two SKUs? What if there's a what if there's a Nest version? What if there's a I don't know. But so, what would the differentiator be?
Absolutely.
All the lines are so blurred. I can't think of a single thing they could do for the Nest version of the Nest Hub.
Yeah.
Unless they add a camera to it. Is there two SKUs, one SKU with a camera, one SKU without a camera,
no,
and one is still going to be called Google Home Hub?
I think that's an FU to people who already bought one, the early adopters.
Well, yeah, that's true. But they may, you got to think about it though. Most early adopters did not pay full retail price. And what if they, you know, what if the one without a camera is $129 and the Google Nest Hub is $149 or something? You know, that I don't think that would piss people off. It was a $20 difference, one has a camera. I mean, no,
but,
I think,
but
honestly,
I think,
just philosophically, I think that it makes sense for there to be one without a camera and one without a camera.
Yes, with one without
one
a camera.
With a camera and one without a camera.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think these you can't drastically change a product just 6 months after launch. It's almost an admission of we didn't get it right in the first time if you're already upselling a new device. But that's just my opinion. But anyway, the one thing I want to add was when it's set in the navigation, Google Home Hub, Google Nest Hub, that was the same URL. It was taking you to the same site. It wasn't two different links.
What was the URL destination? Was it Google Nest Hub?
I have to look it up.
Well, whatever the case may be, I don't think it seems absurd to me to imagine just two variants of the same device, one with a camera called Google Nest Hub and one without a camera called Google Home Hub. That doesn't sound absolutely insane to me, especially if, you know, they could keep the MSRP on the standard Google Home Hub at $149 and put the Google Nest Hub one with a camera at $179, whatever, you know, like. That doesn't seem absurd to me. What if there's three products? What if there's Google Home Hub at $149, Google Nest Hub at $179, and a Google Nest Hub Max at $229 or whatever? Is that crazy?
I think that's too many tiers in pricing points that are too close to each other when Google's trying to push this one device that you get into your home. With products like the Google Home and the Google Home Mini and the Google Home Max, there's clear differentiators between each of them. But when you start adding a camera, or when that becomes the only differentiator, I think it's harder for, when people see that the product looks the same, I think it's harder for them to distinguish why they should get one versus the other.
Well, I think the Nest brand being the differentiator there would actually help with that message. I guess one thing that has gotten me off on this train of thought is that it is weird that Google would do a link that says Google Home Hub / Google Nest Hub. If they're just straight up rebranding Google Home Hub, they're going to kill the Google Home Hub. It may be identical, and they're just going to rebrand it as Google Nest Hub and put new packaging on the shelves.
Uh-huh.
Would they keep Google Home Hub in that bottom URL?
Yes, because people are already familiar with the Google Home Hub. Google made a big enough push that there is brand recognition there. And people searching, looking at the site, trying to find this product, they still need to be able to see that name.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's plausible. It just seems to me that if Google was making this decision, that they would just go all in and say...
Yeah. You know. But Google and branding.
Yeah.
Google and branding. And the link is store.google.com/product/Google Nest Hub. So it's...
That would support your argument for sure. Because if the slash, I guess, link or, you know, description takes you to the Google Nest Hub page, then it makes sense that, you know.
Yeah, but it's so messy. But before we talk about the Hub Max, I think this is the product that needs on-stage announcement, that needs on-stage explanation. I know you... differ with how much explanation this needs, but I think for consumers, if Google wants to do a relaunch of the Nest brand or something, I/O is as good a stage as any. Millions of people watching, etc.
Just doesn't seem that important to me. I don't think that Google I/O. I mean, Google I/O one, like, I think that it's not the same as an Apple event, for example. I think Apple events have far higher viewership when it comes to actual consumers. Because a lot of stuff that Google announces at I/O is just not relevant to normal people's lives.
Absolutely, but at the same time, if you want news, like the evening news, to talk about the event, you're going to have to launch hardware. Software is cool, but like most of the times, hardware, smart home stuff, gets you into a news broadcast.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
So, Nest Hub Max, what do we know about? Anything new with Nest Hub Max this week? Nothing really with the device itself, because we already know everything.
Yeah. But yesterday, the Google Home 2.10, the companion app on Android, got an update. And our APK Insight revealed this new device code name Zion. I'm reading directly from the app. It's Zion is a border router with a built-in smart plug, enabling the Google ecosystem in a home. Zion can keep a battery-powered device up to date with the latest software. So this is the smart money is Nest. This is related to home security and the home security push that the Nest Hub Max is probably going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, it sounds like this description jibes pretty well with the Nest Connect.
Yes.
Which is an existing product.
Yes. It's a tiny plug that helps you extend your smart home over wide environments. It connects like your smart lock to your Nest Connect sensor, the Nest Secure Hub. So
Nest Guard. So Nest Secure has three parts. It has four parts technically. Nest Guard, which is basically the hub of the security system, which has like a keypad on it, and you can use the little Nest tag to disable the alarm. It apparently has a speaker, as we found out recently, because Google
microphone
added has a microphone because Google added the assistant to it. That was a whole controversy, like one day controversy. It has all that, and it's the actual base station that kind of goes off if the alarm system gets triggered. Then there's the Nest Connect or the Nest Detect, which are little tags that you put on your door that, you know, obviously do two things, you know, detect whether or not the door is open, and also have kind of motion sensing on them for detecting motion in the room that they're in. And the Nest tag is the part that you can put on your keychain that can disable the whole system. And then Nest Connect is like you just described. It's basically a bridge of sorts. I guess you could call it a border router that, you know, basically lets you use those Nest detects on doors and in places in the house that are farther away from the Nest Connect or the Nest Guard. Really confusing. But all of this comes back to say the theory is that perhaps Google's kind of unbundling all this. So at the current moment, Google kind of sells it as one big package. Or at least tries to sell it as one bit package. There is some amount of unbundling that you can do and add-ons that you can make if you want to put more Nest Detects on more doors and so on and so forth. But it looks like Nest maybe unbundling it even more and making potentially all this change could be solely for the purpose of the Nest Hub Max taking the place of the Nest Guard. Is that our current working theory?
Yes, that is... current working theory, and for most people it much prefer interacting with a touchscreen and keypad, so it really does make sense
for sure. And I think having the Nest Hub Max and the Nest Guard would be pretty redundant for a lot of people.
So home security is a market, a good market for Google to expand in by unbundling, by making it cheaper. And you can, by just having a Nest Hub Max, the sell to consumers that you can start building out your own home ecosystem because you already have a key part of it with your smart display is a good sell.
Yeah. So the question remains, I mean, one question I think that's just, I don't know, really interesting to me is that this is the first product that's been both Google and Nest. So we've had the two kind of siloed off up to now. There's the Nest Cam, but Google doesn't call it the Google Nest Cam. And it is sold in the Google store, but it is sold as Nest Cam, and a big difference is that the Nest Cam doesn't have an origin in an existing Google product. So Nest Hub Max has its origin in what was up to now, or seems like up to now, called the Google Home. So not only seems that Google is directly branding it as Google Nest Hub Max, but it has an indirect connection to another Google product, the Google Home Hub. Because as we know, as our Kyle dug up, they share many, many similarities, not to mention the obvious one, which is that they're both smart displays made by Google. So the question remains is this going to be something that Nest sells on Nest.com, which would be the first time that Nest is selling something that is Google branded?
Well, or, they have given away like home minis and stuff.
But they're not directly selling any Google products on the Nest website. So the question is this a Nest product or is this a Google product? If it's a Google product, then to me, that's a shift in how Google's message or how Google is using the Nest brand. Because up to now, the Nest has been siloed off, but brought in under the umbrella of the Google Store to be sold. But mm-hmm. there's not been any crossover in actual branding.
So, yeah, so. Speaking of about that, so there's this Zion device. There is another code name called Castell. That appears to be the Nest detect, the things you attach to your door. But another more interesting thing is this, it's called a reactive UI that users can turn on and off. Again, I'm reading from the strings. Hub uses ultrasound proximity detection to show you touch controls when you're nearby the device and hide them when you're not. So there's this Hub device, which... I guess our first inclination would be to go to the Nest Hub Max that can detect when you're near it to automatically show controls. So this sounds a lot like the Nest Secure, which is not called a hub or referred to a hub in any sense right now, where the keypad is when you're not actively using it, it's just buttons. You just see 12 buttons. But so once you're close to it, it actually shows the numerals and so other surrounding icons and status signals. So, do you see this feature in the Nest Hub Max?
I think that's the most obvious assumption. I think when this string refers to hub, that they're referring to. I mean, if this string is in, sorry, forgive me, but was this in the Nest app?
In the Google Home app, it's a setting. It's under a device setting.
That makes it harder. For some reason, I was under the impression that this was in the Nest app, in which case, if it was in the Nest app, then saying hub would make sense because you'd be presuming the word Nest before it.
Yes.
So that would indicate Nest Hub. And maybe hub is just going to be generically referring to hubs.
Yeah. But yeah, this... So, like, when you go into your device settings in the Google Home app, you have a number of options. You can choose to turn this off, this close proximity sensor. It's hard to comprehend how it works with a touchscreen because you can already see it, you can already touch it. So I don't know what they're doing that with this ultrasound proximity detection.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
And the last thing we had in Google Home 2.10 is Speaker V. earlier this month, we saw a device code name called Device YBC. Google usually, before they want, they code name the devices before it gets another code name. And in this case, Device YBC. Yes, they turned into Speaker V or Speaker 5. And as you pointed out, this Nest Hub Max would be Google's fifth speaker device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there might be some weird cross-pollinating happening here because they've ultimately decided on the Nest brand, but I think maybe at one point this was internally referred to as basically Google Home number 5. Which kind of it is. If you count them, we've got Google Home, Google Home Mini and Max, which launched the next year, and then Google Home Hub, and then this would be the fifth one. So maybe that's what that's been referring to this whole time.
Mm. And as another thing, there is one more code name. There's a sixth device, Device YNM, which we haven't seen any movement on and is still unnamed. So there is one more device.
Well, there is one more device that's rumored.
Yes.
If you don't remember. Which I don't know if we're thinking about the same one. Yeah, we're thinking about the same one, which was from the Nikkei report, which said that a new Google Home was coming this fall. So
maybe that's early. Very early.
That's what that is. But it makes sense. I think three or four years is a pretty good time to revamp. There's lots of things about the original Google Home that I think could just be updated,
improved.
Yeah.
It could adopt a new branding. Design stylings, Google.
It could be a quiet update in the same sense that the Chromecast has been pretty quietly updated.
It's iconic how the original Home looks. I always saw it as more friendly than the Alexa cylinders.
For sure. Definitely is, in my opinion. But yeah, anyways, I think that's pretty good. We'll have more to talk about on this subject, specifically Pixel 3 and Nest Hub Max, even though we've pretty much covered everything. So if you don't know everything, we were making a lot of assumptions on this show that you know pretty much everything about the Pixel 3a and 3a XL. If you aren't crazy following Google, then you might not know, in which case you can over 95google.com and find all our coverage. I specifically had a scoop on just basically all the details of the Pixel 3a. So you can go check that out, has specs and everything else. On another note, I can't think of any kind of good segue for this. Maybe in phones that are completely unrelated to the Pixel. I can't think of anything. Samsung is seemingly going forward with the launch of its Galaxy Fold foldable device, which is the first premium primetime Android foldable. They're seemingly going forward with it this upcoming, I think April 26th is the launch date for consumers, even though this week has seemingly been a bit of a mess.
Like you said, the Galaxy Fold, impressive display technology where you can fold the screen. On Monday, Samsung began letting press get some hands-on time. They sent people home with review units. And then 48 hours later, all these reports emerged of the screen breaking. There are two issues, basically. So people who removed protective layer, which in the defense of the journalist review units, the units they got appear to be the European variants that had no labeling about not to remove this protective film, screen protector, whatever, that basically absorbed all the dents and whatnot. So once these Mark Gurman at Bloomberg and Marques Brownlee removed these screen protectors, these films, their screens just started shutting down. It started turning black over the course of 24 hours to the point where it's not usable. So that's a fair issue, I guess. Don't remove the screen protector.
And in their defense as well, not only was there no warning, but if you look at these phones up close, it really does look like a screen protector, and it looks like the kind of screen protector that like half of the Android phones on the market ship with, mm-hmm. pre-installed. So I don't blame them at all for just peeling it off, because it very clearly looks like it's something you're supposed to peel off, in my opinion.
And I'm not sure if Joanna Stern at the Wall Street Journal, her screen protector was coming off by itself automatically. She didn't remove it, but it began peering after a few days.
Yeah, she said that she picked at it and then realized that it's not something removable. And then that, it just has over time seemed to be, peeling itself up, which is not a good sign, because it would not be difficult for a consumer to open this box and, just pick at it even just a little bit and end up, I think she even said on Twitter, like, it was really frustrating her that she has this like corner of the protective film that's peeling off, and she can't peel it all the way off because if she does, it'll ruin her phone. So Samsung should have buried this layer of the screen further under the bezels or something. I don't know how they could have done it, but it looks just like crazy easy to accidentally peel. But apparently, from where the word on the street is, despite these four separate isolated events, which were unfortunately for Samsung, all because of, they're all journalists. These issues seem to me, if Samsung doesn't change anything between now and April 26th, these issues in both cases, the first one being the film and the second one being the one we haven't gotten to, which is that there's just weird problems with the display kind of getting punctured from underneath. Both of them seem like they will scale, if you know what I mean. Like if Samsung ships 100,000 of these out in the wild, however many they send out as review units, I don't know, 50 maybe, just scale that number up, and it seems like we'll probably see similar numbers of problems from real consumers, which will be a disaster for Samsung. Absolutely. If that happens. But anyways, the second way that these different people have been having issues, primarily Dieter Bohn at The Verge, has detailed, I think, the most thoroughly, and also
Steve Kovac at CNBC. Steve Kovac.
Yeah, both of them had kind of issues where their screens broke, but it didn't have anything to do with peeling off this layer. In the case of Dieter, his unit, he doesn't know how, but it seems like some kind of debris or something got in the hinge underneath the screen. So in between the screen and the inner hinge, and it was kind of pinching from the bottom. And he said when he first noticed it, that it was basically a little bump that he could feel on the front. But as he kept folding it and as he kept using it, this bump eventually punctured the display from underneath, it seems like, and basically caused two rows of broken pixels that spanned the entire device screen. So that's another case, man, where it's like, you know, with the peeling thing, like that's definitely something I could see end users making that mistake. If Samsung doesn't put a card in every single unit with a huge warning and like red, big bold letters, this is another thing like that where it's like these things are going to be in people's pockets. It's not going to be hard for bits of sand or debris to get in underneath that, especially since that hinge, I don't know. It just seems like this is definitely a case where if this is a common occurrence, I mean, this happened to Dieter after 48 hours. So if we put these in the wild, if Samsung puts these in the wild and little bits of sand and crumbs, dirt get in underneath the screen like they did in Dieter's case, you know, how long is it going to take before everyone has this problem? Because if this happened to Dieter on day one, assuming this is not a manufacturing problem on Dieter's unit specifically, you know, I feel like every unit could have some kind of gunk or some kind of dirt, something stuck under the screen within a week or two, or maybe a month. I don't know. It just seems insane. It actually reminds me of the butterfly keyboard problem with Apple. It's like $2,000 laptops. All it takes is one crumb under the keyboard and you're toast. Your keyboard's broken. And it's like, is that what we're going to see happen with the Galaxy Fold?
Yeah, again, $2,000 phone issues. Who is buying this phone, realistically? The average person is not going to buy this phone, right? It's...
phone reviewers who didn't get a review unit.
Yeah, that's the primary market. This is like a device that Samsung is primarily going to get into the hands of famous people and just like give them a free unit.
Famous people... Yeah, there are people who have tons of just disposable income that just think it's cool. I think there's a market there.
Yeah, definitely. I guess we don't really have to worry about this. The average person taking their hard-earned money to buy a phone and then only having their primary phone break. Well.
Also, I just thought of another implication of this.
Yes.
These carriers are going to be signing people on for $66 a month. For this phone.
Oh, man.
It's going to be a disaster for the carriers if people sign on for $66 a month and their phone breaks after a month or two.
Yeah, and consider the fact that...
The carriers are kind of going to get the peripheral damage.
Yeah, even if they end up giving people a Galaxy S10 Plus, it's still like $1,000 left. How are you going to recoup... How are the consumers going to recoup that cost? It's a mess.
Well, I mean, I think that Samsung has to respond to every single issue that people have with the Galaxy Fold with a free replacement.
Oh, absolutely. Like,
they're going to have to. And I think, I don't know, I think what we'll see, if Samsung does push forward this launch on the 26th, which is just like a week and a half away, if that happens, I think what we'll see is Samsung will have to be prepared to just replace whatever percentage. What's the failure rate going to be? Is it going to be 10% of devices are going to be shipped back and get replaced for free? And are they just going to keep replacing devices until they kind of iron out the issues? I mean, are they going to pull an Apple, basically? Like, it's basically how Apple's handling this keyboard situation is that, you know, they're just replacing people's keyboards four-year warranty.
Grudgingly.
And with every year, they've tried to make tiny, tiny tweaks without changing the fundamental structure of the keyboard. Most recently, 2018 keyboard had this kind of silicone sleeve on the inside of the keys to try and keep dirt out of there, which is Apple kind of admitting that there's a problem while not admitting that there's a problem and just replacing people's broken keyboards it's kind of just like swallowing the cost of the mistake and just not admitting that there was a mistake. I think that might be what we see Samsung do. They're just going to replace units indefinitely for three years. And then they'll launch the second version of the Galaxy Fold next spring. And hopefully these problems will be ironed out and then this will all be in the past.
Yeah. It'll be very interesting to get another data point in the Huawei Mate X to see whether this is how fragile these devices are.
Yeah, that's another point, is that if Samsung's having this problem, I can't imagine that Huawei's situation is going to be any better.
Yeah, and it's worse because the screen is always facing outward.
Yeah, if the screen's this fragile that peeling off that extra layer causes damage.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that the Mate X is going
to... I have to say, though, if the Mate X were made by Samsung, I would have probably bought one by now. I'm not lying. I have absolutely no interest in the Galaxy Fold, but I am surprisingly interested in the
Mate X. So you hate the Innie, but you're fine with the Audi?
Absolutely. The Innie is such wasted potential, because you have one screen that you're not using at the time.
That's true.
Also, another funny argument. Yes, the inner screen of your phone is broken, but you literally have another screen outside. So,
yeah. Just use the outer screen. Just close the phone. Just stop using the outer screen. You know,
yeah. One half of the purchase goes to waste. You still have a working phone, 4.6 inches. So, yeah. This is going to be an interesting... This next week, leading up to the launch, I'm sure it's crunch time at Samsung HQ.
Yeah. Oh, man. I actually asked David this question. I was like, which is worse? The all-hands meeting for this or the all-hands meeting for the Note 7 blowing up?
Well, I'd have to think Note 7 in terms of list people.
Sure. The Note 7 was a more important product in terms of
everything. That's also very true.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this Galaxy Fold, it throws a wrench in Samsung's prowess as a tech company, as a hard technology company, in their ability to execute on displays. So I guess there is that in terms of prestige, but obviously it pales nothing to safety.
Sure, for sure. Well, anyways, I think we've pretty much exhausted this topic. Galaxy Fold, we'll see what happens, but Samsung says they're pushing forward and it's going to launch. And
I bet you we get a response in the next 2 hours this Friday.
Yeah, we reached out for a unit and we were told, so this was the day before this all happened. We were told, you'll hear back from us by the end of the day. And then this all happened. And I'm like, I know why I haven't gotten a reply. Because suddenly the whole house is on fire, I think. hopefully we'll get our hands on one next week sometime. We'll be able to share our thoughts on it. And hopefully Samsung won't assume that we hate them, because we tend to not say super great things about Samsung.
And you and I kept trying to call them Google throughout this entire bit of the podcast.
Absolutely. I think that's a fair point. Until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday, except days like today where we record on Friday. We publish the day after in the morning, tends to be when we do that. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Play Music, which seems like is going to be winding down soon, Apple Podcasts, and you can also listen directly over at 9to5google.com and on YouTube. Thanks for tuning in as always, and thanks to Admiral for joining me. We'll see you next week.
Bye.